from London, BBC Caribbean Report.
The Bahamas hangs the condemned murderer David Mitchell. Human rights groups have condemned the move. Elian Gonzalez will be going back to Cuba. That's the ruling of the U.S. Attorney General, and fears that the Millennium Bug could be responsible for delays into flights into the United States. I'm Orin Gordon, and this is BBC Caribbean Report. Prison authorities in the Bahamas today carried out the execution of the convicted murderer David Mitchell. Mitchell paid a death penalty for murdering a German couple almost 6 years ago. Early yesterday, another prisoner, John Higgs, took his own life before he could be executed along with Mitchell. Debbie Nash reports from Nassau.
A death note is posted at 7:20 this morning confirming the state execution of David Mitchell has made little impact on this Nassau community. The last executions were of two men who were hanged at Fox Hill Prison on the same day in October 1998. At that time, there were opponents of capital punishment at the prison gates, protesting and carrying placards. This morning, there were none. Having exhausted all legal appeals, Mitchell, the 27-year-old convicted murderer of Germans Horst and Trud Henning, went to the gallows with little notice and even less sympathy from the Bahamian public. They want blood.
There has to be a consequence for every action. Today, hang them high. I am for capital punishment, mostly because when something very bad happens to us or in the community, we are totally outraged. We want the criminal caught, and we want them punished. As far as the law is concerned, it's been determined that that punishment is capital punishment in this country. Now, if we don't want them punished, if we're going to start deciding how the punishment is going to go, then there's not going to be any deterrent any time to crime.
National statistics for 1999 registered 65 murders, the largest annual figure ever recorded for the Bahamas. Of those, 58 took place in New Providence Island, where Nassau and the country's only prison are located. Some among the handful of bystanders waiting outside the gates for the posting of the death announcement said they were robbed, in their words, of the other executions that had been scheduled for today. Ediston Thurston, convicted in 1995 for murdering an unidentified man in order to collect insurance benefits, is on a 21-day stay as he has filed an appeal to the Privy Council. The suicide of 51-year-old John Higgs, who bled to death in his cell in Wednesday's early morning hours during suicide watch, has stirred up far more public interest, including scathing public indictments of both the Bahamas penal system and public security. At this afternoon's coroner's inquest, a four-man, three-woman jury listened intently, as did a room filled with police officers and relatives of the deceased, to understand how a man on death watch could have accessed an instrument sharp enough to, with one stroke, according to pathologist Dr. Dino Grammatico, have caused death. Also present was lawyer Philip Davis, visibly still shaken at the death of now both his clients. He says he hopes this inquest will begin to show the urgent attention needed at Her Majesty's prison at Fox Hill. For BBC Caribbean Report, this is Debbie Nash, Nassau.
Meanwhile, human rights groups have condemned the hanging. Rukman Maharaj has the reaction.
Amnesty International is calling on the Bahamian government to impose an immediate moratorium on executions with a view to abolish the death penalty. Amnesty failed to get Mitchell's execution stopped, as it asked the Bahamian government to do yesterday.
No, we haven't, and we are saddened, but we are not surprised. The Bahamas and this execution is perhaps illustrative of a number of countries in the Caribbean which continue to execute at pace despite the worldwide trend towards abolition. Most recently, for example, we've seen Turkmenistan on December the 27th, which became the first of the five former Soviet Central Asian republics to abolish the death penalty.
Amnesty spokeswoman Olivia Streeter. Both Mitchell and John Higgs, the suicide victim, had petitions pending before the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights. The London-based group pushing for the abolition of the death penalty in the region, Caribbean Justice, has condemned the execution. Their coordinator, Shalee Simmons, said in a statement that while Jamaica, Barbados, and St. Lucia have reported reductions in violent crimes, Trinidad and Tobago, however, carried out unprecedented multiple executions. The murder rate has not reduced. Ms. Simmons pointed out that Mitchell's execution illustrates the contempt the Bahamian government has displayed for its obligations as a member of the Organization of American States.
Rukmin Miraj reporting. The regional human rights organization Caribbean Rights has just issued a statement saying it's deeply distressed that the executions have taken place on the dawn of a new millennium. The government of Hubert Ingraham has not commented publicly on either Mitchell's hanging or Higgs's suicide. You're listening to BBC Caribbean Report. There's strong feeling in the Cuban exile community in South Florida about the decision by U.S. immigration to send back 6-year-old Ilian Gonzalez to his father in Cuba. They've been demonstrating outside the house where Ilian has been living with his mother's relatives in Miami. Ilian survived a shipwreck in which his mother died. They and others had been trying to get to Florida by boat. The U.S. Attorney General, Janet Reno, says the decision acknowledged his father's legal right to speak for him, but the exiles are outraged.
It smells bad, and people here in the Cuban exile community who always tend to see conspiracies everywhere feel that this is a done deal even before the decision was made, and they resent that.
I would say that's a stupid decision because it's no future for that boy in Cuba.
I just want everybody to see what the mother went through. I want everybody to see that Elian doesn't want to go back, and he said it 1,000 times. He does not want to go back. And I just want somebody to see that, to see his point, to see the mother's point, and to forget about the father for a minute.
The last voice, that of Georgina Sid Cruz, Ilian Gonzalez's cousin. One of the most visible exile groups, the Cuban American National Foundation, is maintaining that the father, Juan Miguel Gonzalez, should come to Miami. I asked their spokeswoman, Inosca Perez, what good that would do.
Well, it would have been a decision without the pressure of the Cuban government.
So you're not opposed, per se, to his father having custody of him? You think that's
no,
fair?
We have said from the beginning that the child belongs with the father. It's the fact that the father is obviously being manipulated by the Cuban government, reading a script which we have heard before from the Cuban government, is what makes it difficult to think, one, that the father didn't know that the child was coming, or that the father didn't agree with the child staying in the United States.
If you accept that he should be returned to his father, shouldn't you also accept it if his father elects to remain in Cuba?
No, the father has not elected to remain in Cuba. Fidel Castro has spoken for the father and said that he does not need to come. Now, the father had initially told the family that he would come. It is evident that the Cuban government fears the embarrassment of having the father probably defect in the United States. But again, the question posed is, why is the Cuban government not allowing the father to come to the United States?
But what evidence do you have that the Cuban government is pressuring him to stay there?
Well, it is a totalitarian regime that has been in power for 40 years. This is not the first time that something like this happens. And when a father says that he was going to come and then Castro comes out and says that he's not coming, and when Castro mobilizes thousands of people, something should tell you that the case is being manipulated by a communist dictatorship headed by Fidel Castro.
Let's say for the sake of argument that the boy's father, Juan Gonzalez, is allowed to come to Miami. Would you then resist the temptation of trying to make him defect?
No, I don't think anybody would have to make him defect. I think that if the father were in Miami and he were free to choose, you know, perhaps he would have a different frame of mind. I don't see how you can consider that here people would be tempted to make him defect, and you are questioning whether he is being coerced by the Cuban government. I don't understand the logic behind it.
But isn't it at all conceivable that he may choose to remain there?
Well, then let him come and take his child back if he chooses so. There is no problem with that.
Well, Ilian himself seems quite attached to his father. The word is that they speak every day and...
Yes, they speak every day, and he also tells the father that he doesn't want to go back and that he wants the father to come. So I don't see how you can speak of an attachment of Ilian with the father when you have not seen him talk and you have not seen him perhaps the attachment that he has with the family that he's with. So let's not talk about attachment because neither you or I know what that real attachment is.
Inosca Perez of the Cuban American National Foundation. I spoke a short while ago with our reporter Tom Gibb in Havana.
Well, what I've been hearing on the Cuban side is obviously very different. I went out and talked to a number of Cubans on the streets this morning, most of whom said that they believed the boy should be sent back, that he should be with his father and his grandparents, or all four of them are on the island.
Is the father being manipulated by Dr. Castro, as the exiles have suggested?
There is some evidence that he's changed his mind, in that he initially said publicly that he would go up to collect the boy from the States if he had to, and then afterwards said that he wouldn't. But on the other hand, from the very beginning, he actually said he would only go up there to collect the boy to bring him back to Cuba. He's never said he wanted to defect. And he has remarried, and he has a baby daughter on the island, so that may well be part of his thinking, that he doesn't want to actually split up from them.
But the Cuban government has made political mileage out of this, or sought to make political mileage out of this.
Certainly. I think both sides of the Straits of Florida jumped into it head first.
Tom Gibb on the line from Havana. Sugarcane farmers in Trinidad and Tobago have compromised an outstanding debt sold by the sugar company, but they're saying they'll not cut this year's canes until they get a better price. It's just days before the start of the crucial crop, and the farmers say that unless the government agrees to a substantial increase in the price paid for each ton of cane, they'll down tools. Tony Fraser reports on a meeting between the farmers and the Ministry of Agriculture, the Minister of Agriculture, Trevor Sudama.
The farmers say in the interest of producing the crop, which could make or break the sugar industry, they will remain silent for the moment on their claims to an outstanding $15 million bonus from 1999. But in so doing, Rafiq Shah, chairman of the Trinidad Island White Cane Farmers Association, told the agriculture minister that the farmers want a minimum of $175 per ton for their canes. The TICFA leader says the farmers will not allow themselves to be ignored. And according to Mr. Shah, the farmers will not make any quiet, behind-the-scenes sweetheart settlement. He says the government will have to make its final offer in public.
After the announcement is made, we'll see what is being offered. We are asking government simply to give us something reasonable. We are going to give you the best crop you have ever had. We are going to turn around that industry and use the year 2000 as a turnaround point. But give us something.
But as of today, Agriculture Minister Trevor Sudama says the government, which will have to bear the cost of the increase, can only offer $163 per ton for farmers' canes. Mr. Sudama leaves open the possibility of the cabinet increasing the offer, but perhaps not at the level expected by the farmers.
China Limited, not being a viable entity financially, that any increase will have to be supported by the Treasury. And therefore, that final position has to be decided upon and approved.
Two sides do not have a long time to haggle about the increase, as Karani is scheduled to start grinding cane by next Monday. Any delay by farmers in cutting their canes must affect the quality of sugar to be produced and impact negatively on the goal of producing 120,000 tons of sugar. That figure is 33% higher than last year's production. Tony Fraser in Port of Spain for BBC Caribbean Report.
Aviation officials in the United States are investigating the second computer failure in a week to have caused serious flight delays on the East Coast. The failure of the air traffic control system forced the grounding of many flights. It's prompted speculation that a Y2K computer problem may be to blame, although officials say that doesn't appear to be the cause. Jane Hughes reports from New York.
For the second time in a week, planes using one of the world's busiest air corridors were seriously delayed because of the failure of an air traffic control computer. All flights using Washington airspace were grounded, and air traffic controllers had to switch to a backup radar system. Flights to and from Boston, New York, Philadelphia, and North Carolina were also affected. Officials say the situation is now returning to normal, and they're investigating the cause of the computer problem. Questions are inevitably being asked about whether a Y2K bug is to blame, though officials say that doesn't appear to be the cause. The speculation's being fueled by the fact that another air traffic control computer near Boston failed earlier this week, also causing long flight delays on the East Coast. The Federal Aviation Administration has denied that that problem was Y2K related.
Jane Hughes, ending BBC Caribbean Report. Before we go, here's a reminder.
This and our other programs can be accessed on our internet website at www.bbc.co.uk/Caribbean.
I'm Oren Gordon saying goodbye.